Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 44. What if you delivered 7,000 babies?
It's hard to have a down day when you touch the beginnings of life. One of my early memories was a baby came out before we had time to glove up, and you just reached down and a baby just sort of fell into your hands, and delivering a baby barehanded probably is as much as an opportunity to touch really the essence of life as you ever get to do for another human being. I wasn't really good at any one thing, but I thought I could be kind of good at a lot of things. So I thought medicine gave me the opportunity to do science and humanities and probably leave a impact on people's lives. Not that I thought that was important at the time, but I wanted to have some meaning somehow, and I always thought medicine would do that. So I went to school and just never stopped and ended up as an obstetrician all those years later. I delivered my first baby 40 years ago, so it's been 40 years worth of doing obstetrics. My first delivery was with a patient. She was having her 13th baby, and they said, you go in there, and you can probably handle this. So I gloved up and walked in, and she said, I only ever push one stock, and the baby comes out. Are you ready? And I nervously said, sure, I can do this, and one push, out came the head, the shoulders, the body, everything, boom. And I thought, gosh, here's a career I can really do. Only to realize later that the deliveries just don't happen like that. You really have to kind of laugh and smile to think about the original design of the whole project, but there is a little humor when you think about sex and reproduction. In the moment of hot passion, I don't think people are thinking about, you know, buying shoes for a first grader. Sex is a phenomenally hilarious thing. There's hormones, there's activities, there's positions, there's repetitive motions, there's timing, there's cycles, there's ups and downs, there's mucus and blood, and the entire process is absolutely amazing. If you think of current delivery, turns out that babies seem to be born while their fetus is more than fully developed little hominids or humanoids. The fusion of the skull bones haven't taken place yet, and the only way you can get a 9-pound baby through a human pelvis is if there has to be some molding of the head, so the bones have to be overriding in order to get it through. There's a term called caput, where they're molded so much that the baby comes out almost like a cone head or a tube shape, because it's the only way you can get the babies pushed through. You know, maybe if the pelvises had been bigger, we'd have children that were, you know, a little more capable and ready. But I think that having a brain of larger percentage than a lot of other species, you just have to accommodate the stretchability of the skull. I think every one of us that deals with sexuality and reproduction, you really get to be compartmental. Just almost, there's a partition that just goes up immediately, and it's everything in medicine is really a puzzle. So you're emotionally involved, but you still have to buckle up, and it just happens. I think the thing that makes the job doable is the ability to compartmentalize. The person that you're taking care of is the human being that you know and you relate to. But for the problem at hand, you totally compartmentalize the person and the mother and the parents and the rest of the dynamics. It becomes a physical problem of getting a baby out of a stuck spot or getting the heartbeat up or doing something, an urgent cesarean or whatever. So you flip-flop back and forth between, you know, sharing the intimacies of another person, which is their personality in their life, to the technical part of just doing the job, And then as soon as the job is done and the last stitch is in place and hopefully a good outcome, you put the dressing on and there is the person that you had before you started the procedure. So I think compartmentalizing really makes it possible. You couldn't really think this is all the emotional baggage attached to a person's life and you're making a critical decision on, you know, on how things turn out. It'd be overwhelming to put all that in play. You'd be distracted from the technical part of doing it. I take it for granted that I can reach inside of a uterus or scan inside of a uterus or get babies out from tough spots. I mean, when I see things lit up in the operating room, everything's always brightly lit. You see everything everywhere. I mean, you see it, feel it, touch it, operate on it, move it. And most people, there's the only real thing that they see is, you know, after the baby's out and it's all the mechanics are already done. I'm used to seeing it kind of from the inside out. The cervix should dilate, the head should come down. There's certain milestones that you need for a successful outcome. And the minute that you're off from that, you're just looking at some kind of potentially not good outcome. And the kind of the classic triumvirate of infection, bleeding, and birth injury are been the same things for all mothers since the first babies were ever born. So the job of an obstetrician or any nurse midwife is to kind of prevent the big three, the bleeding, infection, and birth injuries. One of the kind of frightening deliveries is what's called a shoulder dystocia delivery, and the baby's head comes out, and the shoulders are the widest part of the anatomy, and they get hung up in the pelvis. So the baby's head is out, and the shoulders just don't budge, and what happens, you only have about 3 minutes to get the baby out before there's hypoxic damage to the baby. The placenta's usually pumping the blood through the umbilical cord, but the cord is often pinched during that part of the process, so the babies do not do well partially delivered. This one particular delivery, there was a woman's third baby. The head came out, and the shoulders were way high up in the pelvis, and I reached and reached and reached and reached and there was just not room at all. And eventually we're able to get a hand up into the uterus and actually bring the arm down. In the process, we had a neurologic injury. We broke part of the shoulder and had a neurologic injury to the forearm. But the end result was the baby came around and was resuscitated and did okay, you know, from the APGAR scores, but the child did end up with a permanent neurologic injury from the delivery because we involved some of the nerves in the shoulder. The baby has what's called a nerve palsy, and you have sort of like a withered hand. What happens is the nerve supply to the arm prevents it from being useful, and oftentimes it becomes atrophic, so you have a smaller, essentially non-usable hand. Could it have been done differently? You like to think that we might have had some forewarning, but everyone who delivers babies has a delivery where you just cannot get it to come out safely. One of the more high drama deliveries we had one time was we had a baby that was stuck, and the baby was crowning to about the cheekbones, and the mother was pushing and pushing and pushing, and it would not budge. Normally the head will sort of come out to the chin pretty easily, but this was stuck at the widest part of the head. It did not budge. This was a delivery that was being attended by one of my partners and myself jointly, and we looked at each other and thought, this is just a high risk setup for a bad impacted shoulder. And so we put the baby's head back up into the uterus and then did the cesarean section. That's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of event, and I didn't think it was possible, but we didn't really have much of a choice, and it actually happened, and we did it, and the baby turned out okay. I think if you really thought about all the responsibilities downstream, you probably would be paralyzed. There comes a point in a difficult delivery or a bad outcome where there is a stillborn, or you've got a birth injury, or A baby that has severe group B strep meningitis from group B strep at birth, where you have to say that you really, really did your best, and there's things that just really, really couldn't be helped, and you might have made it better, but it still wasn't a perfect outcome. I think the thought about deciding to have a family is you give up everything. You give up your youthful figure, you give up your modesty, you give up your money, you give up your digestion, you get gallbladder disease, you give up your urinary continence, you end up leaking. A lot of people would come in with their birth plans or their ideas or their agendas, all of which are important and empowering. But the truth of the matter is that the uterus calls all of the shots, and the idea you have some control over a uterus that you can't see, don't understand, contracts or doesn't contract, has one baby, two babies, three babies, likes to bleed, likes to cause preeclampsia, likes to promote diabetes. Some control over any of that is a little bit of wishful thinking on our parts. The uterus is controlling the events, and we're there to make it better as best we can. I think the moms who do well tend to surrender some of that control and go with it, and the ones that fight too hard and want to have it exactly the way they imagine it sometimes delay appropriate decisions. So that's always tough when you see people deliberately choosing not to have the uterus lead the charge on what's right and how it plays out. Angry patients usually come when there's a irreversible outcome, hemorrhage at delivery, and uncontrolled hemorrhage, and you end up with a hysterectomy within hours of delivery because it's uncontrolled bleeding. There's no way you can replace the blood fast enough, and you end up with a cesarean hysterectomy or just a hysterectomy postpartum. Tremendous amount of, oh my gosh, you know, how did it go this way? And a lot of second guessing. Should you deliver the baby sooner? Could we use other medications? But in the moment when there's what we call audible bleeding, where the blood's coming out so fast you can hear it, and you've tried all of the tricks that we all know to do. One of the most poignant deliveries I had was when I was a second or third year in practice, very early on, and this was before we had fetal monitoring, and it was a twin gestation. Then when the first baby came out, the first baby was fine, but the second baby came out as a stillborn, and sometime during the course of labor, the baby was in enough distress that probably a cord accident and the baby didn't make it. One of those kind of things that all obstetricians worry about is losing a baby kind of on your watch when you have the ability to intervene. And this one was pretty much lost kind of on my following her through labor. But the amazing thing about it was about 2 days later, the husband came up to me and he put his arm around my shoulder and he said, my wife and I are sad over the loss of our child. But he said, I'm a dairy farmer. And he said, I know that reproduction is like this. And he said, you know, don't beat yourself up over this. You made a sincere effort. You did the best you could. And, you know, that's just part of the way life, you know, really plays out in reproduction. And I was so touched by the fact that he put his arm around my shoulder when it was his child that had died, and I should have been the one trying to give him some reassurance, but I will never forget his few moments of kindness. What's amazing to me is that the number of babies are born safe and healthy despite all of the things that really, really can go wrong. I try to tell the moms that 98% of the time, if you have going into the last part of your pregnancy, of the pretty healthy pregnancy, you're going to end up with a pretty healthy, normal newborn. So it's only a handful of percentage that really get into serious trouble. So there's definitely some humor in the delivery room. One particular story was a fellow who was attending his girlfriend's delivery, and he was a very large black leather motorcycle garb fellow with an intimidating scowl, and he was not the kind of supportive, warm, fuzzy kind of dad that you would imagine. And I was in the delivery room, and the baby's head came out, and the dad was there you know, kind of watching the whole show, and we had one of these shoulder dystocia deliveries where the head came out and the shoulders didn't come in. So I hollered for some help, and I looked up to see in the midst of the trying to get the baby out that the dad was getting really pretty pale because I was tugging on the baby's head and neck pretty hard. And the next thing I know, this 240-pound guy was ready to crash to the floor, and the nurse, rather than help me, which was really what she needed, went behind him, and the two of them hit the floor, and it was like clunk, clunk. And now I'm alone in the room with the stuck baby. The nurse is on the floor, the husband's on top of her, and neither one of them look really too good at the moment. So I'm hollering out the door as loud as I can, somebody come help, help, help. Everyone rushes in and immediately thinks I'm worried about the dad and the nurse. And I said, they'll be okay. I need help here with the baby. So anyway, we got the baby out. At the time of her 6-week checkup, the fellow had changed completely, and he was Mr. Mellow at the 6-week checkup. So he'd gone from kind of being a tough guy to a pretty soft dad. That was pretty funny. The first hour of life is really the magic moment, and being in the room with a newborn and the nurse and the parents, it is kind of magic. There's a wide range of behavior we see with the babies when they come out. The babies almost always have, if you shield them from a little bit of light, so because they're used to being in the dark, and you know, have some sort of warm, comforting environment, they're alert, they look around, their eyes are doing a lot of this you know, kind of gazing around the room. I'm sure they don't focus on anything, but they're just, the first hour or two is just magic when you see a newborn. It's just so remarkable. One of the most emotionally charged deliveries that I ever had was two fellows who had paid for surrogate carriers. And these two fellows had gone through two previous surrogate pregnancies. One didn't take, the second one took, but the child ended up being a stillborn. And this was their third attempt to get a surrogate pregnancy. Anyway, this was an elective scheduled cesarean because it was a breach. And we were in the room, and the two fellows were so nervous in the hallway, they were absolutely vibrating with anticipation, way more than what you normally see with parents who are just nervous. Did the delivery and handed the baby off, and it was a little girl, and we put it in the warmer there, and the two fellows had an emotional catharsis, and both of them just really broke down, and they were very emotional. The next thing you know, there wasn't a peep in the room, and there was not a dry eye in that room when they handed that baby off to one of the guys. I mean, it's hard to imagine the power of a young child to change a life, particularly when you haven't carried their pregnancy and it's not really your child. It was all a surrogate. One thing that's also fascinating is that there's a hormone that helps the uterus contract called oxytocin, or the trade name for it is Pitocin. We've always kind of wondered why mothers bond to their babies, because it's not just random. I mean, it probably has a neuroendocrine basis, and it turns out that oxytocin probably is, it's like the hormone of love. If you give an injection of oxytocin, you feel compassion to those around you. Mother Nature always has an economy where you can find that there's always multiple uses for things. So the fact that it makes the uterus contract and changes the way that the brain receives the acceptance of a newborn is probably a dual role for the molecule. It's the molecule of obstetrics. You it's inconceivable that you could practice without it. It's used for so many things: getting labor started, enhancing labor, stopping the uterus from hemorrhaging, getting the placenta out. There's a bunch of things that we use it. Medicine, to me, is a profession where you wear a robe, and it's a robe of respect and honor that hopefully that you've earned. And to the extent you can be a teacher or facilitator for other people that are coming along behind you, it's really powerful to see someone that you've kind of helped understand the, you know, the larger picture of it's not OBGYN, it's OBGYN and life. I think the line that my mentor told me is, you always try to find the person in the problem, not the problem in the person. People remember you for a lifetime. A person in the office today delivered her little girl 23 years ago, and she said, do you remember the delivery? And I said, not really. She said, well, it was 23 years ago. People very commonly will tell you what you said, you know, where you were standing, you know, the events of the day. So it's, there aren't many times in life when you have reproducible number of events that people recall almost in perpetuity. If you practice long enough also, you get to deliver the baby, but then you get to deliver her child as well. A new couple comes in and they start chuckling. They say, there's something we want to tell you. And of course, I end up delivering both of them as newborns, and now they're coming in as parents with their own pregnancy. So you do get to see things come full cycle.